Hello, Internet. It's Tori. You're listening to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. For updates on when episodes go live, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. To join the discussion, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/CosmereCast, where you'll find an invitation to our Discord server. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Mike. Joining me this week are Craig.
Hello, everyone.
Dave.
Who said that?
And Tori.
Hello, Internet.
And we start every week with good things, so Craig, thing.
Look, I'm just going to keep it simple this week. My good thing is pizza.
That is a good thing. Yeah.
I don't care what kind of toppings you put on it, you know, each your own. The Internet has a thing for having arguments starting with toppings, but you know what? Sometimes you're just in the mood for a good pizza. So, guys, if you're listening, go get yourself a pizza.
I'm partial to a combination of pepperoni and chicken. They're really good together.
I have had a chicken parm sandwich with pepperoni from a convenience store on the East Coast, known as, they're not our sponsors, so I'm not going to say what they're called. But you probably know if you're from the Philly area. But yeah, that's basically pizza, right?
There's a place near my old workplace that had like interesting toppings. To me, interesting being like, you know, mac and cheese pizza, or they would do some kind of pasta pizza. And they had others, too. These are the ones I'm interested in.
Noodles pizza.
These are the
also
ones noodles. That I'm interested in.
There was a ramen pizza and a noodles pizza and a bow ties pizza and a fusilli
nice
pizza.
Is during fall, like right before Halloween, they would have pumpkin pie crust. And that's actually really good because it's like slightly sweet. And it has this, like, sort of aftertaste to it. It was really good. And unfortunately, they're sort of far away from where we live currently. Like, I'd have to drive 20 minutes just to get it. But, sometimes it's worth.
20 minutes? Oh my gosh. Craig, I have to drive, like, 20 minutes just to get to town.
Yeah, I live near Philly, not in the middle of nowhere. So, to me, driving 20 minutes is actually significant.
So, all right. Dave, what's your good thing?
I can drive to work in under 10 minutes if I get all the lights. All right, Tori, what's your... my good thing this week is I bought a book last week, and it was half price. So I only paid like $23 for it. It is a Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition Player's Handbook. I completely skipped over 4. 5th edition's been out for a while, and I'm still like really only got into 3.5/Pathfinder. So like... I'm really excited. I mean, I don't have anyone to play with. I don't know if I'll ever use the book, but I really like reading Dungeons & Dragons rules. And so far, I've only read the introduction, but I picked it up and I'm excited about it.
They're actually really well written. Refresh my memory, Dave. Did we play 5th edition or 3.5?
I think we technically played Pathfinder, which is basically 3.75.
Did we do Pathfinder? I remember picking up the Pathfinder book, but I don't remember us getting to the point where we were playing it.
I think officially our DM said it was Pathfinder, but it was close enough to 3.5 that I didn't really learn anything new.
Dave, my group is playing 5th edition right now, and I'm just going to invite you to join us. Like, they may disagree with my invitation, but I'm inviting you.
Well, why don't you talk to them and legit ask and... if that goes well, let me know when you guys meet.
Yeah, it's usually on every other weekend, and it's all on Discord.
Yeah, that's the thing. You normies always have off on the weekends.
But we did 5th edition with my coworkers, and I remember reading the rules, and I did look into 4th edition. I know Mike has opinions about 4th edition. I think that's his favorite.
I love 4th edition. If you ever want to know more stuff about 4th edition, talk to me. I can guide you.
4th edition seems like such a Mike edition.
But personally, when I read through 4th edition, I didn't really care for it. I like Pathfinder. I like 3.5. And then when I got to 5th edition, I'm like, okay, I like where they went with this. They sort of fixed what I thought were some of the problems with 4th edition and embraced... some of the good things with 3.5, and I think it's pretty good.
Well, you see, Craig, 3.5 is for people with programmer brain like you and me.
Sure.
And, 4th edition is for more like, I don't know how right-brained Mike is, but he certainly is more than you and I are. And I think 5th edition kind of, you know, married the two in a in a good way.
Makes sense.
From what I understand, like I said, I haven't actually read any rules yet other than like proficiency bonus or whatever, which is apparently something they actually took from 4th edition, according to Mike. But anyway, from what I understand, 5th edition is like the kind of was a compromise between 3.5 and 4.
Yeah, I also skipped 4th edition, but I haven't heard any good things about it. Just that they gutted it a lot. And I spent most of my time in college playing 3.5. And from what I recall, 5th edition seems to be more in that vein than what I hear about 4th.
Since this is good thing, I'm not going to talk about 5th edition. But it seems like everything's
well. My good
out, so.
Thing was that my good thing was that I bought the book and I'm excited about it, not the edition itself.
Okay, but it seems like we petered out, so I'm going to go ahead and start on my good thing this week, which is a YouTube channel called The Salt Factory. He does a few different types of videos. They tend to be fairly long form, but the one that I've been getting into is was Game As Good As I Remember, where he takes a game that, like, he played, you know, 8 or 10 years ago, and then revisits it with, like, a full playthrough and like, a review. So he takes footage from his playthrough, edits it down to a reasonable length to, like, meet the length of his review. He's done stuff like, bless you, Morrowind, blah, 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 Fallout, various Fallouts, so, like, 3, New Vegas, 4... Or, actually, no, 4 wasn't as good as I remember. 4 was just a straight new game review. Knights of the Old Republic was a really fun one that he did. So, yeah.
That sounds like an interesting concept.
The Salt Factory.
Because I really like Castlevania 1, and I had a friend try to play it recently, and they were kind of criticizing some of it, and I'm like...
Mm.
I think that they had good points, but my main thing was like, hey, in Castlevania 1, every platform that you can stand on, everything that's a solid block, looks exactly the same. It's the same sprite. It's the same color. So, like, it was carrying on from a previous conversation. But anyway, the point is that they had a much different experience as a new player than I have, somebody who's basically had the game memorized for 20 years.
Yeah, there's a few series like that where it's like, this is someone completely new to video games or to this series. What do they think of it?
Oh, that reminds me of that Ocarina of Time blog from the girl who had only played MMOs.
Right, yeah.
They were the only video games they had ever played, and then they played Ocarina of Time, and they kept calling all the dungeons instances.
It's the games you play, you know.
Go on, Mike.
Language.
I know Mike's trying to say something here. Mike?
I mean, if you started with the later Castlevanias, once they completely changed their format, like, trying to go back to the old ones would be, like, at that point you're not even playing what your brain would consider a Castlevania game. Like,
yeah.
This thing is just wildly mislabeled at
Castlevanias,
this point.
And you try to go to 2D, it's like, what?
And my friend actually started with Bloodstained Ritual of the Night. So.
When I was a school librarian, we had... Once a month we had clubs, and the club I was the sponsor for was a video game club. So all of these kids would sign up, this was middle school kids, would sign up for video game club thinking that they were going to be playing Halo or whatever the whole time. And no, I actually took them through, I had lesson plans. I took them through the history of video games, starting with the very first video game that was created in the 50s and moving on from there, and I made them play Oregon Trail, and you have never heard so many.
They're like, we have to like learn. What is this?
They screamed. That's awesome. Literally screamed. Like, I just died of dyslexia. I think you mean dysentery. Yeah.
I know for a while they were doing Oregon Trail in schools. I wonder if that's still even a thing anymore. There's that zombie one.
Schools, I think that the Oregon Trail. I think schools still exist, Craig.
No, schools.
Well, I think we're still doing
they're
that.
Rather virtual right now, but I don't know if they do Oregon Trail. They should.
Do they even have computer labs anymore?
They do. I think they have to. All right. Any of you guys have the drawing turtle in school? I mean, I'm old, but Some of you guys are old. Do you have to do like the turtle where you have to control like up, down, left, right, and it draws a pattern or path?
I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, I don't remember that. I remember lots of city
and I don't know what you mean.
I remember math problem games and little typing games.
I guess I'm just too old. But if any of you guys experienced that when you were a kid, hey, leave a comment in Good Things.
If you were ever.
So, all right, Tori, what's your good thing?
Untitled Goose Game.
Yeah.
I know I'm a little behind the times here. I know everybody else has already played it, but my friend Jesse just showed it to me earlier this week, and I like immediately came home and had to download it, and like I've already done the whole thing. But it's so cute. For those of you who have been under a rock, like I have, Untitled Goose Game is a game where it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood and you are a horrible goose and you go around causing problems on purpose, to quote the meme, and, it's fabulous. You, the goose, just you break things and you frighten children and you steal stuff, and it's completely mischievous without being malignant. Like, goose is gonna goose, and that's it. Like, it's so fun. I love it. Highly recommend.
It's like somebody took the saying, birds are jerks, and then made a video game about it.
I mean,
where you get to be the bird jerk.
There have been many video games about it, which is where I think a big chunk of the thing came from. But yeah, like Ninja Gaiden. Ninja
Gaiden. That's not a game. That's not a game centered around like, well, maybe.
it kind of depends on how many times you die on that stage.
I mean, I don't think Tecmo sat down and was like, birds are jerks. Let's make a game with a ninja to prove the point that birds are jerks.
Ninja Gaiden maybe. That was the game I thought of when Mike was talking about, was this game as good as I remember? Because that one I can only get so far on muscle memory and then I die, and it's usually about there.
It's the birds.
That's the epitome of NES hard, a game like Ninja Gaiden. I think Castlevania 1 is pretty NES hard until you realize you just use the holy water all the time.
Stairs, man. The stairs in Castlevania.
The stairs are good. They keep you from getting knocked into pits.
Anyway.
You have to know how to use this.
Yes. Untitled Goose Game is, you're basically playing a creature with an alien intelligence and its own set of goals that aren't understandable by the humans in the setting.
So it's a cat?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's good stuff.
It's a goose.
It is quite fun. If you don't want to grab it, then, you know, go watch a playthrough.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Because the goose literally has a to-do list, and on the to-do list, steal stuff and chase children. That's on there. I'm not even making it up. And it's too fun. It's too fun. You've got all of these little tasks on the to-do list, but there's other stuff that you can do just because it's there. Like, I'm going to break this because I can. And it's horrible. It's horrible, and it's wonderful, and I love it.
All right, Dave, you read, I believe, some interludes this week.
Yep. Interlude 9, 10, 11, bridging the gap between part 3 and part 4 of this book, Silphrenus from 2. Guys, are we going to do the waifu thing?
If you want to. You want to do that right now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Craig, ask your question. Waifu.
Go ahead, Craig, ask the question.
Hey, Dave. Who's your waifu in Stormlight Archive? No, who's your Stormlight or Archives waifu?
We're supposed to do everybody's.
Well, I started with you because that's how I started. Yeah. But yeah, let's do everyone's Stormlight Archive waifu or husband, though.
It should come as no surprise that my Stormlight waifu is Silphrenna.
Craig, who's yours?
She's cute. She's cute, buddy. She's supportive and sarcastic at times and tries to keep you on the right track. What a great Silphrenna is.
So, I feel like mine is really tough, because, I mean, Syl's pretty good. She's up there. Like, I like Yasna, but she's...
Yasna's butt is...
Well, maybe.
Let's see, but, who did you cast? Yes, we're not doing cast.
I have to look that again. I don't remember who I cast for her. I have to review when we do it next week. But, but she's also comes off as... I mean, there's reasons, but there's, you know, standoffish, and I don't know. Can't really embrace that. Navani's really good, But, you know, she's with Dalinar, so I don't want to take from that. Man, I don't know. I don't really get waifus, so this is hard for me to answer.
You brought the question.
That doesn't mean I have one.
I could see Craig Yasna, because Yasna is like the blue one, like Magic the Gathering blue.
The blue, so yeah.
Straight up.
I mean, I guess if you're making me pick one, it's probably Yasna is the one I'm most like looking forward to. Like, she's the one. If she pops up in a chapter, I need to know more, because I feel like I'm going to learn something interesting.
That's interesting, though, because your Nintendo waifu is Samus, not Zelda. But you'd think if you like Yasna, then you would like Zelda more than Samus.
I didn't say I like Samus more than Zelda.
You do every time you play A Link to the Past and you have Zero Suit Samus as your...
That's because that's my thing. I'm under contractual obligations because our team name is Thandrana Drifters, and it's because I play a Samus sprite. I'm not allowed to change anymore. Also, she was my main in Smash.
Okay, so final decision.
Yeah, Yasna.
Okay. Mine should come as no surprise to anyone. It's Adolin.
It is Adolin.
It is 100% Adolin.
Is it because he pooped his pants?
That's part of it.
I think that helps.
That's part of it.
he picked up the charm at that chapter.
But no, there is more. Some of it we haven't gotten to yet, but Adolin. For sure, Adolin. So, Tori?
Gosh, I really don't get the waifu husbando thing. All of the main characters, I don't really feel that way about any of them. I feel more of a motherly, like, I just want to cuddle them and rescue them from their problems kind of feeling. Like, but
then who's your child do?
Oh, they are all my children. My poor babies. Like, I just want to rescue every one of them. but, no, probably husband status, and you guys are going to laugh at this, is Sabariel. Because he's the one that most closely resembles my actual husband, if we're going to be honest, just that he thinks the rest of the government is corrupt and he's not going to have a part of it. Like, he's 100% done with all of these stupid people. He's just going to do his own thing, and it's going to be smart. And also, he's going to have good food and luxury on the side. Like, that's us.
Sabariel's pretty great.
Now I have a better picture of your husband, Tori.
Yeah, I've said it before, but he says he's a Slytherin, getting back to Harry Potter. He's totally not a Slytherin. Like, he is a Hufflepuff. He is absolutely a Hufflepuff, like, through and through.
Nobody admits to being a Hufflepuff. That's
every time he takes those house tests, he'll pick the Slytherin answer, and you know he's forcing it, because in real life, the way he responds is, it's always the Hufflepuff answer.
Okay,
always.
But the houses were set up in Brave, Smart, Evil, and Other.
No, you know, Slytherin's not evil. Slytherin's clever.
Yeah, everybody always says that Hufflepuff is Other, but it's about friendship and loyalty. And
let's just stuff these traits in here. That'll make it more appealing.
No, my husband is amazing guy that gets along with absolutely everybody. And, like, in his career, everybody wants to work with him because he's the good guy to work with. He's just a straight-up good guy.
So he's Cedric Diggory. He's like the best of Hufflepuff.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes.
Okay, but, like, there are kids that don't fall into any of those categories, and they end up in Hufflepuff. So, Other.
Yeah, because the ones that actually do belong in Hufflepuff, they're going to take care of those kids.
So, Brave, Smart, Evil, Other.
Loyal.
Other.
No, should we do the other series? We have to do our Mistborn waifu and our...
I think we should get to the chapters.
Oh!
Next week. Well, no, we have cast list next week. All right, Interlude 9. Lift. Oh, crap.
What? Why?
Bronze Palace booby joke. I think that I wrote that bullet point because it's supposed to mean to come back and actually write a booby joke, but I forgot. So the bullet point just says Bronze Palace booby joke.
You sure you're not just referencing the fact that there was a booby joke in the book?
No, I wanted to come up with one myself that was clever, but I forgot.
I think the bullet point is fine as it is, honestly.
if I could jump in here real quick, I talked to Dan a little bit last night, your brother, and he said that he has offered to help, like, joke coach you on your bullet points before.
No. Dave doesn't need coaching. They're good.
I've taken his suggestions before.
I'm kind of leaning toward insert booby joke here, as maybe he could use a little help.
Nah, I'm with Tori. I like it.
So, all right, back to it.
It's more his reaction when he notices that he forgot to write a joke. That's the good part.
Yeah, see, Mike's not seeing the meta humor.
It's true. I am a big fan of meta.
Tigzical. If Lyft counted in binary, she wouldn't be unlucky until age 1024. Windle, the pet void bringer. Lyft prefers the pacifist strats in Metal Gear Solid. She has visited the old magic. Awesomeness is a much funner term than investiture. I don't talk to myself because I'm crazy. I do it because I'm awesome. Which is my new catchphrase. Lyft wants some Uber Eats. Every sense of that's spelled wrong. Every sense of morality is odd. Lyft can poop Stormlight. Well, it says she metabolizes food in a Stormlight, but she basically eats food and poops Stormlight. Wait, if she metabolizes her food into Stormlight, does that mean that she doesn't poop? Like, if she actually...
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer.
We need a word of Brandon on this.
I bet there is one.
Hold on, I'll look it up.
We already know he's no stranger to poop talk in his books, so...
Alright, well, Craig looks that up. It's bad to be Prime. That's a take on the old Mel Brooks line. Lyft plays Clue Land around the food table. Darkness comes for a thief. Is Azir actually just the country of Hermes Conrads from Futurama? It's just like, remember that episode where Hermes requisitioned his group back, and he goes to like the central bureaucracy, and it's like everybody's just like filling out the proper forms and getting back within 3 to 4 weeks. Like the whole big joke about everything being bureaucratic and to the point and everything has to be proper and technically correct and the right forms and stuff. That's Azir. Azir's just like, if you took the central bureaucracy from Futurama and made it a country, that's Azir.
Yep.
This dog eats Stormlight. Surge binders use spheres to invest. Kind of a possibly intended funny play on words where they have spheres with Stormlight. And they use them to capital I invest with their powers. But also, spheres is money. So you can also invest spheres and use spheres to invest. Darkness is awesome, too. These wieners will give me the Stormlight I need to escape. I posted that picture, I think, in Discord.
It's true, you did.
So in Treehouse of Horror 5, the one where Ned Flanders ruled the world and was turning everybody into Ned Flanders, and Homer's trying to escape the... enrichment center, and he's being chased down by these dogs, and he pulls out like a chain of wieners, like the old cartoon trope, like you throw the meat at the dog to distract them so they don't chase you down. So he pulls out a chain of wieners and he says, these wieners will give me the quick energy I need to escape. That's basically what Lyft has to do. She literally eats a sausage so that she can get the Stormlight to use her powers to escape. All right, we hit Futurama and The Simpsons in one interlude.
So if I can interject, I looked up the Lyft pooping situation.
Mm-hmm.
There's a discussion on Reddit. I'm not going to go into it because no one knows and they're theorizing. But I did find a word of Brandon where someone's asking if she can convert some other object into investiture. And Brandon said she can only convert what she's able to metabolize for nutrients to investiture. So... Now, I'm certainly no biologist, but I believe that poop is just sort of what's left over, what you can't metabolize, or it just goes through too fast and it wasn't able to get it all. So I think she does poop. It's just whatever she couldn't digest or what was processed. And it's whatever she metabolizes nutrients into a vegetator. The food itself is an investiture.
Okay. Just
her body making sugars and stuff like that is the investiture.
That's disappointing. All right. That would be a good like origin story for Lyft. Like, they never had to change her diaper.
Well, keep in mind, she does have that lack of friction, so pooping might be easier.
Well,
By the way, this was one of the first searches I had to do on Google where I got told safe search was on. I don't want to know what comes up when it's off, but...
Shard blades are built to kill Voidbringers. Darkness's minion did not file the proper paperwork to slit Gox's throat. These dudes are so lawful neutral. I will remember those who have been forgotten. Oh, yeah, and then Gox is made prime, which I didn't write down. All right, so this interlude follows a girl. She's like 10 or 12 or something, and she is an edgelord.
Edge dancer.
She's an edge. She's an edge dancer.
She's an edge lord.
She's an edge dancer, which means she can manipulate friction and she can manipulate growth and regrowth. So she calls her power awesomeness, similar to how Vin used to call her power luck.
I remember that way back in the day. That was like her first thought, and then it stopped being called luck
because she learned what it actually was.
It was called Investiture / Allomancy / Soothing.
Continue. Right.
So she's like, she's a little thief girl. She's with this group of thieves. The group of thieves, and this takes place in the palace in Azir. Their leader has passed away. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Their leader has been murdered by Seth.
Hold on. Dave?
Several times. Yeah,
I have a fun game for us to play. Every time you get to a new character, I would like you to spell it, and then I would like Craig to attempt to pronounce it.
I think
that sounds like an amazing game.
You mean moving forward? I think we're done actually with new characters for today.
But... No. In this chapter, just in your chapter recap.
There's a bunch of her crew and everything have weird names.
Yeah, I didn't write those down.
Oh well, good news for us. All right. I'm looking at the copper mine, and they're all listed out.
Okay. Yeah, so they're in the Bronze Palace. Their leader, which they call the Prime, the something-something Prime, Optimus, I don't know. And then...
Optimus Prime.
The Prime...
Wait, this is a name I should pronounce.
The
Aqua Six? There's no U, though. How do you say a QA? Tori, how do you say this Prime name?
I think it was just as a K in the audiobook, so Akasix.
Akasix.
You got to sound like you're choking when you get to a Q. Specifically pointed out in the chapter how to pronounce the part.
Yeah, shout out to Kate Redding for actually doing that in the audio narration.
For Tugzik. Well, that's not that's a double K. That's not a Q.
Tigzik.
It's Tigzik.
Tigzik. And then suddenly, Mike has to do a lot more editing this episode.
No, I'm leaving all this in. Oh, I'm cutting that out.
Oh, man.
It's like, do you ever play Seventh Guest? Like this little slurm puzzle under the microscope?
Please don't. Right,
hey, guys, if you want to know what sound Dave is making, you should join our Discord.
Listening live is the only way you're gonna get to hear that. I'm never releasing that sound.
Alright. So Lyft's like, thieves that kill people are doing it the lazy way. I'm gonna play stealth mode. And she's also she's a surge binder, she's a edge dancer. Those are her powers, I just said. And her pet spren is like an ivy spren or vine spren type of thing, growth spren. I don't know what it's called, but I don't know the type of spren, but it's basically like a vine that sometimes makes itself into a face, sometimes makes itself into little footholds for her to climb things. And then also she's got some seeds that she can make them super grow and burst open a window. And she can also heal people through growth, regrowth powers as well. This guy's after her. She also she talks about food a lot. This guy that she just calls Darkness is coming, and he's gonna come and kill her. And he knows that she's a surge binder, and this interlude finds out. But he's filed all the proper paperwork to kidnap this seemingly random street girl and put her to death. However, his minions did not fill out the paperwork to slit Gox's throat. So that guy's in trouble until Lyft uses her healing powers. She's actually escaped, but she comes back and heals him. And then they're like, oh, this kid's the new Prime because he's his throat was slit and he's healed himself. He's the new Prime. And as the new Prime, he pardons Lyft. And Darkness is like, oh, man. But I'm lawful. I can't.
Foiled by law again.
I'm lawful neutral. I can't kidnap her now. And that's most of the interlude. I think I covered the important points.
Okay.
Oh, and then her like her tagline, her like Surge Binder phrases, I will remember those who have been forgotten.
All right. So Craig.
It's not don't forget to be awesome, which is a phrase by the brothers Green. Don't forget to be awesome.
I have character names to spell for you to pronounce and then for Tori to correct you.
Wait, I have a question for Dave, a legit question.
Okay.
Do you recognize Darkness?
I will be absent. It's the absence of light. It happens about 12 hours a day every day.
Mike, no. Do you recognize the character Darkness?
See, because he was dressed in black, I immediately thought of Hoyd, but Hoyd usually works alone, except when he works with Ronaldo, which is all the time. But Ronaldo's not here. And then Hoyd usually works alone and doesn't get himself in situations where he's murdering people. Now, like, maybe he wouldn't have actually put Lyft to death and he just, you know, did all that to get her aside. But Hoyd's MO is, like, talk to Surge Binders, but not, like, in a violent way. Like, I'm sure that he would have found a way better way to, like, get her. So I don't think it's Hoyd.
So let me help. He was from another interlude. You did not really care for this interlude, I think.
Was it the puddle one when they were in Puddle Land? Is it the guy? Is it the eat cookies and chill guy? Like the two scholars guy? Probably not him.
I don't even think you remember this one, Dave. Actually,
is it the one? See one of the people chasing down Hoyd?
No, he's from the chapter with the cobbler, the shoemaker. You remember? Do you remember the shoemaker?
Oh, he used to eat shoes for orphans.
Yeah. Dave is clearly not an edge dancer because he's not remembering.
He totally forgot. Yep, his description is very clear in that chapter, and he matches the description here.
Oh, okay. There was another character in that chapter, you're telling me.
I mean, it's the guy who killed the cobbler.
The cobbler died? I don't even remember that.
Spoilers for a chapter you read before.
Oh, all right.
So.
All right. That's the question I have.
All right. So this guy I don't remember is some guy I don't remember who killed another guy I don't remember.
Yep, you've also seen him twice before in the prologues.
Oh, is it the Voidbringer?
He was at the palace, and
because his description is with the crescent scar, so. If you see someone with a crescent scar, you know it's Darkness.
It's Darkness. Okay. There were a couple actually more like world-building stuff in this chapter. For one thing, Lyft calls her pet Spren a Voidbringer, and he insists that he's not a Voidbringer.
Does he say Voidspren or Voidbringer?
Voidbringer.
Okay.
So maybe she's just wrong, or maybe there's something that we don't know that somehow connects Voidbringers and Spren, other than Spren being used to turn listeners into Voidbringers, maybe, I guess. And the other thing is that I'm going to buy into this one. She says that shard blades were built to kill Voidbringers. And remember, when she says Voidbringer, she means Spren. And we remember how at least Sylphrena doesn't like shard blades or is afraid of shard blades, and like there was this big abandonment where the Knights Radiant turned on the Spren apparently or something. And yeah, that's I'm gonna buy this and say that shard blades were crafted to kill Spren, and it makes a lot of sense because Spren primarily exists in the cognitive realm, and as per Dave theory, a shard blade actually cuts things in the cognitive realm.
I think you should post that in Dave Theories.
Pretty sure I have. My Dave theory is the thing this girl said is probably true.
Okay. Can I spell names and have Craig mispronounce them now?
Sure.
Because I really want to do that.
Oh my gosh.
All right. First name. A-X-I-K-K.
Axach.
Tori?
I don't remember that name.
Cool.
I guess it's correct.
So I'm going from the summary for Words of Radiance from the Coppermind is where I'm getting these character names from, which means they're in this chapter.
At the same page.
Next up, D-A-L-K-S-I.
Dalksy.
And
Dalksy.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
Okay. G-A-W-X.
Gox.
That is correct.
Yay! I have one correct.
Woo. H-U-Q-I-N.
Huquin. Honestly, these names aren't as bad as, like, some horn eater names.
I think it was just Hookin.
So more of a K, Huquin.
Right, Hookin switch.
I'm going to skip ahead a couple to one we've covered, but I want to hear it again. T-I-G-Z-I-K-K.
Tigzik.
Spot on.
And then W-Y-N-D-L-E.
Windle?
Correct.
That's an easy one.
Oh, Dave got that one. Dave said it, Windle.
Oh, well, because he winds up like
wait,
a
which is correct, Windle or Windle? Now I'm...
It's Windle.
I'm right.
But it's not a wind spray. He's a windy vine spread.
All right, that's all the names I wanted to...
Something else I want to point out with this chapter, Dave. This is minor spoilers, but Mike said it was okay. Lift will return in Edge Dancer, which is the short story that we're going to read, I don't know, sometime in the future.
Oh, cool. I like her. She's awesome.
Pun intended?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So Edge Dancer is Stormlight 2.5. It's the novella that takes place between Words of Radiance and Oathbringer.
Yep. And Lift is the main character.
And we should be getting to it sometime after Mistborn Era 2 Part 3.
Yeah, I think it's shortly. It's the next one, isn't it? Like right after that?
Should be somewhere in there. Let me check our list. Okay, so we got after Words of Radiance, we're doing Six of the Dusk, and then Allomancer Jack, and then Shadows of Self, then Bands of Mourning, then Mistborn Secret History, then all the stuff that's in Arcanum Unbounded that isn't actually the stories, and then Edge Dancer, and then Oathbringer.
Because we already did like half the stories in Arcanum Unbounded already, so that's cool.
Yeah, so with...
Wow, I feel like we have a chance of eventually completing this podcast.
Like, Edge Dancer will be the last thing from Arcanum Unbounded that we cover. So, all right, next.
Next name? Or next interlude?
Next interlude.
All right, interlude 10, Zeth. Zeth found Erythiru. Zeth wants to find answers or someone to kill. This was a quick one.
Yep.
So, Craig, how do you say the place that Zeth is?
Erythiru. I've been meaning to correct myself.
Excellent. Do we have anything for this?
I've been saying it wrong.
It's more like Asian. Erythiru.
So, do we have anything on this interlude? I don't have anything.
Hey, look, this place exists. How about that?
So... Did he get here in the usual way? Did he walk or did he fly?
Maybe he upside down walked.
Yeah. I think he fell with style.
Okay. And then Eshonai.
Interlude 11, New Rhythms. Venli and Eshonai are storm sisters. Rhythm of Anxiety, which we later find out it was the Rhythm of Peace that was making Stormform Eshonai anxious. But I wrote Rhythm of Anxiety, and then it turned out there actually was a Song of Anxiety after I wrote that down. All right, the humans only wanted to meet to gloat about the destruction they would bring. Wait, that was Eshonai that did that. Let's all be Storm Sisters. Heart. Rhythm of Fury, Spite, Ridicule. Those are all the new rhythms that you get to learn with Stormform. You get a storm form, and you get a storm form, and you get a storm form. That didn't feel like her, not at all. Execute my former friends. Eshomom descent. Everything is just fine. Dissenters escapinated through the chasms. Yeah, so check back in with Eshonai. We've only seen her in that one scene with Adolin since she put on storm form. And yeah, she's a little scary now. And overthrowing the government and basically forcing everybody to have storm form. I mean, they have a choice, sort of. Like, their choice is, you know, you're free to storm form. And most people are buying into it. But then the people that are dissenting, she's planning to execute. So they sort of don't have a choice. But I guess they can choose between storm form and an unknown fate. But then Eshonai's right-hand man... Thane? What's his name?
Thude.
Yeah, so Thude is taking all the dissenters and escaping through the chasms. And yeah, there you have it. I'm ready for part 4.
Okay. Anybody have anything for Dave for this?
I don't think so.
Okay, then Dave, do you have anything for us?
I'm kind of curious. Maybe I missed it. Do we know what type of Spren that they used to transform into storm form?
I don't think you know.
Do I know?
I don't think you know.
Is that a Rafa?
Yes.
Okay. Do we know the other Spren though? Like, oh, it's Wind Spren for Dull Form or whatever.
I don't think we've been explicitly told that either.
You for sure haven't. We know a couple for the different forms that they have. I can think of one for sure that I know.
The storm form. All right. Okay. No, that's basically it. Most of the interlude was Lift. It's kind of funny. I was like, oh, I'm just going to read. There's three interludes. I'll just read the first one before I go to bed tonight. And then it was like, oh, this interlude's 30 pages. I'm going to read half of this interlude.
I do have something for you, Dave. Actually, all right. For all of our listeners, just as a reminder that next week, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, we are planning on doing our cast list.
Yep.
So
we're also probably going to record at a weird day or time because of scheduling.
We'll have to discuss our schedule, but just be aware that next recording will be cast list time.
Cool.
And I assume we're just, I don't know. I'm planning on just doing new people. I might review who I casted before. We'll see.
You have it posted in our cast list channel, so you need to go back over that, it's there.
The more I think about Jeanette McCurdy as Shallan, the more I like it. That is all. All right, bye, guys.
Bye, Dave.
Bye.
Bye, Dave.
Dave's gone. Play the thing.
This concludes the spoiler-free section of our podcast. If you are, as I am, reading along for the first time, we recommend that you stop listening now, as the following will contain spoilers for not only this book, but for other Cosmere books as well. There may also be general spoilers from any other source material. Spoilers begin now.
Okay, what do we want to talk about?
Hey, I guess that Lift girl's pretty awesome.
So I think first we should... What Spren do we know goes to what form for the listener? So there's Pain Spren.
So the Storm Spren is a type of Void Spren.
Right.
So Dave is correct.
And they're the little red lightning guys.
Yep.
Pain Spren gives you War Form.
Okay, I remember that.
That was a definite thing that we were told. I don't remember any of the others.
Was it Pain Spren or Anger Spren?
It was Pain Spren.
I recall Anger Spren being something.
It was for sure Pain Spren for War Form.
Okay.
All right. I pulled up the Coppermine entry on Singers. So Dull Form is bonding an incorrect Spren, or a Spren that does not grant a form. So it's sort of like a general.
It's a 404.
It's a 404. Mate form.
404, Spren not found.
Our Life Spren. Life Spren equals mate form.
Okay.
War form you already mentioned is Pain Spren.
Yep.
Work form is Gravitation Spren.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And Nimble form, we should also know Wind Spren.
Okay. That makes sense.
Hmm. Gravitation Spren. Interesting.
Yeah.
Don't hear about them a lot.
That one's intriguing. Because that's like the opposite of the Mandras, the Lux Spren. Gravitation Spren go down, where the Lux Spren Mandras go up. So do we have any info on, like, any of the Regal forms? Like, what Spren are involved in those? I know there are Void
Spren.
Yeah.
Like Envoy Spren or Envoy form. I thought they are all type of...
They're all Void Spren,
Void,
for sure.
Void Spren,
but, but, like, there are different types of Void Spren.
Right, like Storm Spren is a particular type of Void Spren.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it doesn't look like... Hold on. I don't see anything in the wiki about that. I don't think we know that one.
I'm looking up Regal, the Copper Mine, real quick. Do so. Most of what we get are apparently comes from the epigraphs from, what was it, part two of Words of Radiance?
Yeah, because they have the song in there.
And then a little bit is what we get from, like, actual stuff happening in books. But I'm not seeing anything about, like, what Spren they bond with. So, okay. Except Storm Form gives you, you get it from a Storm Spren.
Yep.
All right, so I guess we just don't know. Cool. All right, so, yeah, let's talk about Lift.
Hold on.
Nail and the...
Hold on. So, just because you mentioned Eshonai, I do have a quick question for you guys. The end of the chapter, Eshonai sends Thu to guard the Dissenters. That's what the wiki says. I mean, that's what happened. And then they escape, right? And then when they escape, like, Venli's all angry, like, we gotta go recapture them or something. And Esho Nai says, don't pursue them, since she assumes they're gonna die at the next high storm anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious if that's really Esho Nai saying, let them go. Like, because we know Esho Nai is in there somewhere. Like, most of the things she's saying that we see in the chapter is the Void Sprint, or... No. Void Sprint is not sentient. It's something else that's controlling her. But
Odium's
every
influence.
Now and then we get little glimpses of Esho Nai's actual character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I assumed that that's what it was just something inside of her was able to get that across.
And I feel like at this point, like just like Dave, I knew they were not going to die. Like, it's just like Yasna and Dave's opinion of Yasna, which I know I probably gave that away when I talked about Yasna earlier, but come on. He knows she survives.
Yeah, that we all knew, I think.
But
the fact that the body disappeared should have been a big giveaway.
I think this is sort of the same thing. They're just all, yeah, they'll totally die at the next high storm. Wink, they don't die.
Okay, but we go an entire book not checking back in on them.
I know.
And then most of the next book, after a high storm and an Everstorm meet on the Shattered Plains, like, they should have died. Everybody thought they died.
They had a head start, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how they survived. We still don't know that.
They had a pet Casimene.
Yeah,
they don't have it yet.
I think they do. I think they have to in order to not be dead.
So you think them getting a pet Chasm Sprint is directly
Chasm Fiend
leads to them surviving?
Yes, and I think we get a little bit of evidence of that in one of the flashback chapters in Rhythm 4.
Okay.
When Esho Nai's out in the storm and she's like face to face with the Chasm Fiend.
Right, right.
And it doesn't immediately murder and eat her.
Hmm. Okay. Okay, now we may talk about Lift.
Okay. Lift is awesome. Windle is the only character that we've met up to this point in the series who has all the information we need, and the only person he can communicate with does not care.
Yep. He retains a lot of his memories, doesn't he?
Yeah, they went to, like, some trouble. I don't know exactly what or how, but they went to some trouble to make sure that he would remember... like, he wouldn't lose his memories, so that he could communicate this stuff to the humans, and the person he bonds doesn't want to hear it.
She just calls him a Voidbringer.
Yep.
Yep, that's Lift. Lift and Windle, the power pair.
So
And you can just picture all of the Spren having their meeting where it was decided that he would go to Lift, when they were like, yeah, she's young, we can mold her.
Well, apparently he wanted to go, like, check out the cobbler who got killed in the earlier interlude.
He did. But, he was feeling connected there.
But apparently when he was told to go to Lift, one of the Truth Watcher Spren got there instead.
Right. Man, frickin' Nail, though. It's all his fault.
He was doing what Ishar told him was necessary.
I'm not sure. So lawful neutral, I think, does apply to him, but is he lawful evil? Because it always seems like it's the worst case. Like, rather than capture, imprison something, when it comes to Proto-Knight Radiance, it's kill them. Like, it's the extreme. But he is also following what Ishar said to do.
Right.
So is he lawful neutral or lawful evil? I know he's not lawful good.
Well, he's still lawful, but he doesn't necessarily apply an external, like, system anymore.
Well, he is the law. He's just the law.
Because he has reached the fifth.
Yep.
Not heightening. Oath. Yes. He's a level 5. He hit level 5. Ding.
By the way, my casting choice for Nail is Judge Dredd.
Okay. So, which Judge Dredd?
The Sylvester Stallone, I am the law.
Oh, you don't want to go Carl Urban?
Really. It's not really.
Carl Urban was a way better Urban. Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
I haven't actually seen any other Judge Dredd, so I don't know.
You should watch Dredd. It's really good.
I like Carl
good.
Urban, though.
It's pretty really good.
But yeah, so he is the law, and of course he was told to kill the Proto-Knight Radiant, which is why he's after Lift.
Mm-hmm.
She actually has manifested quite a bit of her power, from what I can see. But she does make the oath, and she's protected by law, at least in the immediate sense. Because the Prime... So Guax... pardons her, but I'm sure she's committed other crimes in other countries.
You had his name right, and now you're doing it wrong. What do you do? No, there's no W.
Gox?
There is a W, but it's not there.
Don't give me that.
There's not two W's.
I don't know what I said anymore. I don't know, guys. Look, this is going to change. It's going to happen. It's very fluid.
I love you guys.
But yeah,
you're killing me. I am dying.
Has pardoned her, but I'm sure she's committed other crimes in other countries. I think she was still at risk, at least until more starts happening, and Nail has a crisis of faith, so to speak.
Well, she's safe in Azir.
Yes, correct.
And has a...
Which is where I think she stays for a while.
Yeah, and she has a perpetual pardon because her best friend is the Prime.
Yep.
And, yeah.
It's really loud outside my house right now. I hope that isn't being picked up.
It's not.
Okay.
So, Lyft is a fan favorite. I didn't really care for her in this chapter, honestly. And because I'm frustrated that Window wants to tell her stuff and she just writes him off. Like, that, I felt... I identify with Window.
So...
I'm like, darn kid, just listen.
Brandon already had a system in place for the Spren to not know things to be able to tell people. He intentionally bypassed that to give us a character who could tell us stuff, but just won't, because the one person he can talk to doesn't care.
Yep. She comes around a little bit, though. She admits that he's not a Voidbringer.
Like, by the start of Rhythm of War... Like, there is free communication at this point, so, like, everything Window knows he has been able to pass on.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter anymore.
Right. It's sort of like when, in the beginning of this book, Yasna had a lot of stuff she needed to pass on, but she, quote-unquote, died, and then by Oathbringer, we already know what she knew anyway.
Well,
and then some.
When she comes back at the end of this book, like, it doesn't matter. And Wit is there to, you know, taunt her about that.
Yep. As he does.
Yeah. Like, hey, good job learning all this stuff. You're too late. So, but
and
what about...
And she still dates him later. Gosh.
What about Urithiru?
That's because he knows stuff. Like, I like what they did with Yasna's character, and I can sort of understand why she gets into a relationship when she's not, you know, she's not interested in the physical aspect, but he knows a lot. Hoyt is probably the best person for Yasna, given... his depth of knowledge.
Oh, I disagree.
And what he does with that knowledge.
I disagree.
You disagree.
I think Yasna and Chris have a bright, bright future ahead.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
When they eventually meet and fall in love.
Okay, correction. Of the characters that Yasna has met, Hoyt is the best candidate. Man, I need Yasna and Chris to get together. Like, just to talk.
And then Nash is also there as a dual research assistant.
Like, let's just throw all of these scholars together. Oh, man, so much would get done.
Fetching books and diving into the ocean to rescue crates and, yeah.
We need this. But yeah, I think Hoyt is the best candidate given the character she has met. Because we know she hasn't met Chris yet. But we were talking about Lyft, and I know, like I said, when I first read this chapter, I didn't care for Lyft. Then she gets a whole book, and I'm like, ugh. Then I read the book, I'm like, alright, it's good. She's okay. I'm sorry, guys. I know you will yell at me because she's a fan favorite. I'm just sort of on the neutral Lyft train.
Okay, so the best character is the Lopin. We can all agree to this, correct?
Correct, yes.
I will not debate this.
Are you agreeing or are you just not arguing against it?
Just keep going.
No, I need to know where you stand here.
Yes, the Lopin is great.
You're with us or you're against us, Craig.
You either agree, or you get to go stand in the chasm and wait for your fate.
I'll be with you for this one.
Okay, so the Lopin is the best. People who don't think the Lopin is the best, we still love you. You're still welcome to listen to the podcast, but you're a little bit not welcome here.
What? Dang, Mike.
And then the next breaking point is Lyft. Whether you're on board with the awesomeness or you find that aspect of Brandon's writing a little tiresome. And I gotta say, on rereads, it gets more tiresome. Like, a lot like Shallan's wittiness from Way of Kings.
Yeah.
Like, the more you read it, the less fun it is, I think.
Sure.
But, I don't know. I think, like, the fact that Lyft and also Shallan, you know, they both grow throughout the course of the series. So, like, it's not... Like, as you see Lyft later, she's not just awesome this, awesome that. She still has some of that, but, like, she also grows, so...
So, the thing about Lyft that I find particularly refreshing is, yes, she has problems, she has issues, but her powers are not one of them. Kaladin's over here like, oh, should I be a Knight Radiant or not? Oh, the Light Eyes are going to take it from me. And Lyft is like, awesome, I'm awesome, I'm just going to use my awesome to do awesome things. Like,
she just embraces the magic, which is nice.
And she just goes with it.
She's also kind of bad at it still. Like, even later.
But she is still embracing the fact that she has power, and she's not... I think Tori brings up a really good point. Like, in contrast of the only other powered character we have in this particular book, Kaladin, like, Lyft is a completely different perspective on it, which is nice, because... We don't get a lot of investiture in the first two books.
Yeah.
We get Zeth, we get Kaladin for the most part. And then we started in this book, we get Shallan and Lyft. But Shallan's hiding her power, and Kaladin is certainly hiding his power.
We also get a little bit of Renarin, who is super duper hiding his power because he's pretty sure it's going to get him killed later.
Yep. By Yasna, no less.
I don't know if he can see quite that far ahead, but. Yes, he is 100% convinced that his powers will get him killed. Blah. I had a thing and it's gone.
Well, we were talking about Lyft serving a purpose, and I think it's a good point. Just like Shallan's wit in the first book serves a purpose of showing how sort of naive she can be, Lyft serves a purpose here, and her attitude serves a different purpose here. And she does grow as a character, which is why I've come around to Lyft. Like, I did not like her in this chapter, but after reading Edge Dancer and by Rhythm of War, I'm like, all right. Although I do like Lyft's exchange with Dalinar at the end of Oathbringer. I love that whole scene. Because he's like, do you have a weapon? And she's like, well, I don't have a book and I can't read, or whatever it is she says. It's so good.
Yes, because Dalinar brought the book to a gunfight.
Yeah, well, he talks about how it's sort of his weapon, so to speak. And then Lyft's like, all right, you're weird. It's so good.
I think my favorite Lyft thing is when she calls Dalinar tight butt.
favorite Lyft thing, for sure.
I think it is, yeah. I'm trying to think of other Lyft things that compare, and, like, nothing's close.
Not Shardfork?
Shardfork.
Shardfork was Shardfork fine, although wildly impractical for, like, actual use.
I mean, if it's gigantic, it can be tiny.
Okay, but... Think about how forks work, and then think about how shard blades work.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, you bring a good point.
Just not super practical.
You know, you actually... Okay, serious talk now, though. Windle brings up in this chapter how weird it is that she can interact with him. Like, that she can actually touch his sprint form. However, when sprints become shard blades, they can be wielded by their bonded person. So that part's not weird. The part that's weird is that Lyft can actually touch Windle while he's a sprint.
Which, I think the explanation for that is the cultivationing that she got done to her.
Yep.
Just made her weird, which also...
It's sort of, she's like partially in the cognitive realm, which is why she can metabolize food into investiture and how she can interact with Sprint.
And
I think she can see all Sprint. I don't think you can hide from Lyft. Like, I think she sees them no matter what.
She doesn't use Stormlight. She uses Lifelight.
Yep.
And we don't learn that until Rhythm of War. We don't even learn that that's a thing until Rhythm of War.
It's specifically Lyft that uses Lifelight, because all other Edge Dancers still use Stormlight.
Right. Which is bizarre to me that... Like, the tower has to run on a combination of Storm and Lifelight. So, like, what was its source otherwise?
What is the source of tower light? The tower itself, similar to Lyft, would metabolize something into tower light. Just like Lyft will take food and sugars and metabolize it into Lifelight. We just don't know what that original something is. It might just be it can take Storm light. And maybe Lifelight is just naturally around the world? Because, I mean, it is cultivation.
Well, that explanation doesn't explain why the tower stopped having access to more tower light.
It doesn't. That's because we don't know. It's related to the Recreants and the capture of Bay Edor Mishram. No, I think it's specifically called out that it's because of the capture of Bay Adam Mishram that did something where it could no longer make Tower Light naturally.
So I think Cultivation withdrew from the world a bit at that time. Like, she was mad about it. And
so you're saying,
she's still there, but...
So you're saying that Cultivation being more active in the world produces more, like, natural sources of cultivation or of life light?
Probably.
Where currently, because Cultivation is in hiding, we only have Lift because that was intentionally a thing that Cultivation did? Is that...
Seems legit.
Okay.
Could be. I have no thoughts with that.
That sounds better than whatever Craig's nonsense was.
What? I just didn't give a reasoning. I don't know. All I know is that something changed and Tower Light can no longer be made.
Okay. Just go ahead and try to convince us that that's what you said. We believe you.
Tori, are you with Mike or are you with me? And it's probably going to be with Mike.
I'm the one who just proposed a theory that kind of counters yours, so sorry.
It doesn't go against what I said. All I said was Tower Light is generated by the tower. Something happened to change its ability to do that. You have provided that something.
Good. Okay. Yes, we agree.
Yeah, we all agree. Tori's right and Craig's wrong.
No.
All right, what else we got? We've kind of been all over the place for this one.
Well, it's mostly the Lift interlude.
Anything fun in the Zeth chapter?
Wait, Tori had something to say.
That was what I was going to say, was being all over the place. Let's go back to Urithiru.
Well, we're not there very long. But hey, he found it. Good job.
And he mentions that he found it before.
It's probably because he flies around all over the world killing people, so I'm sure he's... Hey, what's this weird tower? I don't think he took a Oathgate to get here.
No, I don't think he did. But also, he's like, whoa, what's this weird tower? Except he knows that it's Urithiru. Like,
yeah.
Do the Shin just know about Urithiru?
Probably. They know a bunch of stuff.
I thought there was indications
in the tower itself that made it pretty obvious that it was...
I mean, there's not a big old sign that says, welcome to Urithiru, that we know of.
But... Man, the Shin knows so much. And we're going to get... I think we're going to get their book, you know, book 5. Since it is his flashback book, I feel like we're going to learn a lot more about what the Shin know in the next book.
I just had a thought. Now entering Urithiru, population 1 unmade.
Oh, the unmade is chilling there right now.
Yeah. So the Shin keep the honor blades, and they know what they are, and they know how they work, so they
and
almost
they've been
certainly...
actively training with them for generations.
Yep. And
I'm sure they have stories about Urithiru.
So they presumably Urithiru. Have access to, like, all sorts of Rosharan lore that nobody else knows, or at least none of the characters that we've followed know. So, yeah. And Zeth has the only honor blade that lets you fly. Because Nail has the other one.
So I feel like this is another situation similar to Windle, where we have a character. I mean, in this point in time in the book, it's fine. But by the time we get to Rhythm of War, they should be questioning Zeth about everything he knows.
They are. They just don't know what to ask. And he's not volunteering information, because I'm honestly not sure why he's not volunteering information.
He may not realize he has to volunteer the information. I don't think he's aware of the lack of knowledge. That the other
character and he's basically been going through mental abuse for years at this
point.
And there's some PTSD there, and he's kind of regressed in a way, very childlike, like doesn't think for himself in some ways, waits to be ordered around.
Okay.
Right.
What if the keeper of Yezrian's Honor Blade is also the traditional custodian of Urithiru? Like, he'd be the only one who can realistically get there of the Shin.
Of the Windrunner, whoever is holding... They gave him that Honor Blade, didn't they? The Shin. It's not like he stole it, correct?
Right. Yezrian's Honor Blade.
Yes.
So, like, he'd be the only one who could reasonably get there, and...
At this point in time, because Nail has his own.
Right. So, like, what if that's just sort of a thing that the Shin do? Just like, here's Yezrian's Honor Blade, here's how you get to Urithiru... Sweep once in a while, if you could, please.
We don't know exactly why they gave him that honor blade, do we? Like, why in particular they gave up Yezrian's honor blade?
I mean, it sounds like they're just sort of assigned out to various people, and
But why give it to
Zeth's
a true
dad?
Flip?
Apparently, had one of the other Honor Blades,
and he has trained with all of them.
Yeah, so
this is weird.
Maybe there's like one big family, and Zeth is one of the members of that family, and they all get Honor Blades.
I mean, we know that Shin value farmers and people who create very similar to the Horn Eaters. They're valued more, and those who pick up weapons are sort of the lowest cast.
I don't know. We need book 5.
Like, I think we know that.
And then after we don't have after we don't have answers from book 5, we need book 6. And then when we don't have answers from book 6, we need book 7.
The fact that they just gave up Yezrian's Honor Blade to a Truthless who was kicked out of Shinovar.
Well, the thing I'm thinking of is, I mean, he's up there chilling in Urithiru. What if something happened to him up there? Then the blade would be up there, and they wouldn't be able to get it back.
Yeah, so what I'm getting is, I don't think the Shin care. They don't seem to value the Honor Blades very much. They know they have power, but they're also sort of like, just whatever
okay.
about it.
What if the goal of the Shin isn't so much we hoard the Honor Blades, so much as we don't let anyone else have these? So if Zeth were to, let's say...
How is that different from hoarding?
Well, I'm getting there. If Zeth were to, say, have a heart attack in Urithiru, and they just can't get the blade back, they don't care because no one else also has it. It's like...
Right, but they kicked him out, and sure, something could happen to him in Urithiru, but what if something happened to him when his Oathstone was held? Like, in whatever town or city or wherever he was located, something happened to him, and he dropped the Honor
Blade.
That's
addressed. That is addressed in Way of Kings.
Can you refresh my memory?
The Shin will send people to go collect his blade.
Okay.
That's a thing.
So, just the essence is the Shin maintain the Honor Blades. That's it.
Right. And what I'm suggesting is that they don't necessarily care if it just lies somewhere forever. They just don't want it in the hands of people that aren't them.
Right.
And they're obviously okay with, with a Herald taking their blade back.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's not like they can do anything about that.
Can't they?
Nail is a full-blooded Skybreaker. Full ideal Skybreaker.
Okay. Minus his blade, they have 8 others. They can 8v1 that dude.
They could 8v1 him, but we have Nail and his Skybreakers. So, it's not 8v1, it's full disadvantage, which we have talked about last week.
Okay, but one of the blades is the... Is Ishar's blade, and presumably they would know how to use it properly, and thus
Do you think they could do fun connection stuff?
Maybe.
With his blade?
I mean, that might be something that you actually need the bond for. Like, you need to actually be a bondsmith rather than having the blade. I don't know, because Ishar still seems to have bondsmith powers without his blade, which is weird.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. Okay, hold on. Sorry, you got me off on a tangent here, because I was thinking about Kaladin and how he's a Windrunner. We know that the different Knights Radiants have, like, a special sort of use that their powers use for. They have an emphasis on certain things. And it seems like Windrunners are all about flying around, but we don't see any sort of special interaction between gravitation and adhesion, aside from the things that it seems like people with those surges can just do. Although, I think Dalinar mentions he has adhesion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he can't seem to do what Kaladin can do with adhesion.
I mean, he sort of can. He stuck a chair to a wall.
Okay.
And then the other two are gravitation that Kaladin do. Like, the other two surges, or not surges, the other two bindings are gravitation-based.
What I'm getting at is I feel like the Honor Blades and the powers they bestow are sort of, they're the surges, but they're not the combination of the surges. The combination comes from bonding with a sprint and sort of the interpretation and what you can do with it being a Knight Radiant from that. I think the Honor Blades just grant the specific surges. So I don't think someone holding Isher's Blade could do connection stuff, but it can certainly do adhesion and whatever the stone formy one that Dalinar can do as well.
So you're actually arguing that the Bondsmith Blade is one of the weaker ones?
I think so.
Okay. I mean, that tracks.
I'm just guessing, like everything else that we know at this point.
So you're saying that if Zeth had had Nail's blade rather than Yezrian's blade, he wouldn't have been able to instinctually divide the innocent and the guilty. He'd just be able to fly around and divide stuff.
Yes. I don't think the combination and the specific Knight Radiant ability is bestowed with the blade.
So then what can the Windrunners do that isn't explained by their searches that
Death
could also do? Because I don't know that we've necessarily seen anything.
That's sort of what I was getting at, because we've seen the combinations for some of the other Radiant Orders, but Windrunners, we haven't really seen anything special. Like, everything that Zeth does, Kaladin also does.
See, I was thinking that Kaladin's, you know, ride along with the Stormfather, was that from Way of Kings when he was strung up in the storm?
Right.
For a long time, but you guys convinced me that it was instead the Stormfather just angry dad sitting on the porch with a shotgun threatening him.
Right.
So yeah, now I have no idea. So what's...
I don't either. We see Skybreakers just fly around, so we know flying isn't instinctual or particular to Windrunners.
Right. So what is Kaladin's ultimate?
I don't know. And maybe that's intentional that we don't know yet. Maybe there's going to be a big reveal in, like, Book 5 or something. We know Dalinar and Bondsmiths mess with connection, although I'm really curious to see what Navani does with her particular instance of being a Bondsmith.
I kind of feel like Navani isn't going to be able to advance that far. And, yeah.
I don't know. I think she's going to do some good things with the tower.
Well...
With the sibling, sorry. With the sibling.
Everything that happened between Navani and the sibling in Rhythm of War was, like, under extreme duress.
I think she's going to spend so long analyzing and studying every aspect and facet of what she can do that she's going to be stuck where she is for a long time.
And I also think that Dalinar is putting a lot of pressure on his bond with the Stormfather, and that may not go well.
I'm sort of worried about that as well. Stormfather does seem to be evolving a little bit, but...
But I think Dalinar is pushing him too hard, too fast.
Right, yeah. Every time Dalinar does something that the Stormfather says, don't do that, I get worried. Because he did that in Oathbringer, and he did it in Rhythm of War. And I'm like, dude, if you lose that bond to the Stormfather, it's going to be super upsetting. Why are we talking about Dalinar? We were supposed to be talking about Zeth.
I mean, the one leads to the other. It's
true.
Fine.
That's what we do.
So, all right. I think we're... I'm out of stuff.
I'm out of stuff also.
Sure. I'm not out, but I'm out of this episode.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Good night, Internet.
Bye.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at CosmereCast or like us on Facebook. Our theme music is Traveling Made Up Continents by Gillicuddy, used with permission. Hear more from him at the Free Music Archive. Thanks for listening.